Coming up, the NBA draft got started right away with a few surprises. Paolo Banchero sneaks into the number one pick, so we take a look at how the Magic managed to shock everybody. We also try to figure out what exactly the Knicks are doing and get to some of our biggest winners and losers from the draft. Finally, we'll go through Kyrie Irving's list of trade destinations and why this might not only be a leverage play after all. All of that and more on today's Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily podcast on the NBA. However you may be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts, thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with Brendan Kleen. We'll try to figure out what the Knicks are doing in a minute, but let's start at the top of the draft, where the Magic took Paolo Banchero with the number one pick, despite everybody thinking that they were going to go with Jabari Smith until minutes before the pick. Kind of a weird day, Brendan. We wake up, Vegas has the odds favoring Paolo Banchero to be number one overall after weeks, months of everybody thinking it was going to be Jabari Smith out of Auburn. Reports from Wojnarowski all day, hey, no, it's still going to be Jabari Smith. It's going to be Jabari Smith. And then minutes before the draft, well, actually, no, it's probably going to be Paolo Banchero. And then lo and behold, the Magic take Paolo out of Duke. That was followed by Chet Holmgren going to OKC at number two, and then Smith falling all the way to Houston at three. But what did you think of Orlando's decision to go with Banchero?
I kind of think the players worked out for all three teams, to be honest with you. I think Houston has the least amount of structure, so I think they were probably going to be okay with whoever got there. I think that Rockets fans seem to be pretty excited about Paolo just because that's what it had been charted to be. But as far as Paolo in Orlando, I mean, I don't know. They have a lot of young talent because they've drafted in the lottery for a long time, but I don't think you can fault a team for feeling like the ability to get a shot in the half court is just something that's so valuable, and none of their guys really could do that. You know, Jalen Suggs is more of an up-and-down guy. Franz Wagner is not really necessarily like your lead scorer type of guy. He's kind of like that glue, the guy on the wing to kind of be a connector for you. So I don't hate the idea of let's just get somebody who can be a focal point for our offense, who can play off of the guys we already have. And, you know, he's still fairly raw, even though he's thought of as the most NBA-ready guy. So I thought the Paolo thing made sense all along. I was honestly surprised that Jabari had just been so locked in there. I got that fit a little bit less, to be honest with you. So this makes sense to me, even if it was a shock just based on what Woj and others were telling us.
Yeah, I mean, we're splitting hairs between these three guys. I mean, you can make the argument that all three of them deserve to be the number one pick, Chet Holmgren too. And I'm with you. It was a little strange. And, you know, there's a lot of people who had Paolo as number one on their board. Rafael Barlow, who does the NBA draft board for our network, had Paolo number one on his board all along. And, you know, I think that's fair. I don't think that the Magic reached. It's surprising only because everybody had put Jabari Smith into that spot. And look, that was the Magic. They wanted to do it. I don't really understand the stealth move because they had the number one pick. They could just take anybody they want. I'm not really sure what they were trying to accomplish.
That's the thing, right? That's the real conversation here. And it's something I can't get my mind around because I went and listened to Jeff Weltman's post-game thing, press conference. He's their president or GM, whatever his title is. He runs their basketball operations. And he said he kind of quelled the notion that, hey, you know, there was this idea like the Magic actually never even spoke to Paolo, this and that. He's like, no, we didn't maybe meet with him in person, but we were on Zooms. He did our personality tests. He submitted his physicals, all that stuff. So I don't think that part of it was quite as secret as maybe we thought. But yeah, what's the play? What's the trade play there? Because you'd think if Houston was seemingly so excited about Banchero, which I think they were, and if you listen to Jabari Smith's interviews post-draft after he was selected, he seemed pretty genuinely surprised. I think he thought he was going number one. So to me, it's like if I'm the Magic and I'm trying to play things so close to the vest and generate leverage, I probably would want to leak that I am interested in Paolo. If the idea is, hey, Houston might want to trade up or, you know, we'll get somebody to come and take the pick from us. I've been thinking about it all night, just like we all have. I don't have a good answer. Maybe they just straight up wanted to not have anybody in their business. They didn't want anybody to interfere, and they just said, hey, we're going to do our thing. But they clearly leaked the Jabari thing. It just doesn't add up.
Right. Unless I just want Jabari to be like really pissed off when the Rockets play the Magic is like the only thing I could think of. I can't figure it out. I don't know if it was, yeah. Were they trying to create like last minute panic leverage with the Rockets thinking, hey, they were the Rockets were going to talk themselves into Paolo, and then, whoa, we're going to take Paolo like minutes before, yeah. Because even when Woj was tweeting all that stuff and reporting it, I was like, is this sort of a leverage play last minute to try to get something out of the number one pick?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was really weird. I still like the pick. I think it was the riskiest thing that the Magic could have done. I know that Paolo is sort of quote-unquote the most NBA-ready guy out of these three, but if you think about it, if you just go with Jabari here, all right, you're taking the guy that's consensus, the number one guy everybody thinks you're taking, so no harm, no foul. Take Chet Holmgren, then you could just always sort of lean on the upside play there because we all know that that's Chet's thing. So actually by doing all of the things they did, Banchero ends up being the riskiest guy because if Banchero doesn't work out for whatever reason, I'm not saying he won't, but let's just say he doesn't, then you look like a kind of like a dumb front office for kind of putting us through this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. They brought attention to themselves for sure. I mean, I think this is the other thing that's been on my mind with this draft, especially – you know, since we kind of heard Paolo and then it became him, was this sort of, well, it reminds me of the 2020 draft. I think of anything that's happened recently, because that was another one where there wasn't that obvious number one guy. And I actually think when Anthony Edwards went number one, he was maybe the least likely of the three to get picked first. And so it felt similar that year. And obviously COVID threw everything off, but what's weird to me about this one, if we want to talk about the Chet part of this a little bit too, is to me, there's always the Chet's probably the guy where if he hits in this draft, we will look back and feel like the Magic were stupid, right? That's the one guy where like the upside, the highest possible version of Chet Holmgren is far and away higher than I think anybody else in this top group. The low is probably maybe the lowest though too, right? So that was why he didn't get picked first. That's why the debate about him has been going on all year. But that guy, the Chet guy in every draft, he usually does fall. But that's usually because there's this obvious number one, right? Like you go to 2021, Evan Mobley falls a little bit. I don't think he was quite as risky as Chet, but similar types of players, right? Where it's like, if they don't ever really come around offensively and their defense is good, but not amazing, like what really are they, right? It's similar type of debate with Mobley then, but you had two guys who went above Mobley in that draft. In this case, there wasn't that obvious one ahead of him. So it's a really strange thing. And it kind of left me wondering why the Magic, I know a lot of Magic fans kind of just like the idea of going for Chet. What do you have to lose? But I guess they wanted more of that sure thing in the end.
Chet and OKC is really interesting, and obviously they make those moves for Osama Jang and Jalen Williams later in the draft too. But I like Chet Holmgren and the Thunder. I think it's the right fit for him. That's a team that wants to get up and down the court. Holmgren out of these three is probably the best at getting up and down the court, handle the ball at 7 feet tall, do all those things. It's kind of hard to like kind of say, okay, which one is furthest away from the Magic, the Thunder, and the Rockets, but it's probably the Thunder out of that group. At least they try to be. And so in that respect, you know, he has a little bit more time to grow into his body and his frame and all that stuff. And then let's talk a little bit about Jabari in Houston, because that's not really a fit that we were thinking about. He goes all the way from number one to number three. I kind of like it. I kind of like having a 7-foot floor spacer next to Jalen Green, who's that slasher. X's and O's wise, it makes a lot of sense.
It's the one where you can just imagine the pick and roll partnership flourishing right away, right? I mean, I think actually Jabari in Oklahoma City, you would have maybe felt similarly with Giddey and Shea over there. But that's what's exciting to me about Jabari is just this evolutionary version. I mean, people have thrown around, like you hear Rashard Lewis, that's kind of the common one. I think he's a much better athlete, much better defender than Rashard Lewis was in like his Orlando days. But Green, it sounds like they're going to put the ball in his hands more, have him play a little bit more point guard like he was at the end of the season for them. they obviously just don't have a lot. So just the foundation in the half court on offense, but also being able to play in transition of just those two guys, shot makers, athletes, young, can develop chemistry together. It's exciting. I mean, to me, like I was saying with Houston, like they just didn't have much of anything. I think they were going to be okay waiting for whoever ended up being there. I think the Paolo thing was just kind of like, yeah, I guess this is our guy. We'll get excited about it. But I don't think that means Jabari won't be excellent there as well. I think that's it's going to be a really fun duo to see grow together.
We'll get to our biggest winners and our biggest losers from the draft next. Plus, we'll talk about what the Knicks are trying to do. Well, at least we'll try to figure it out. But first, we have big news. The one, the only NBA Jam is back. Arcade 1UP, the leader in at-home retro arcade games, is not only bringing the best game ever back, but they've made it bigger than ever with a, wait for it, Shaq Edition machine. People are obsessed with the NBA Jam, and I'm thrilled to tell our listeners that you can once again play hoops with NBA legends in this arcade classic, jump clear across the court, and set the ball on fire in one of the first sports games ever to feature real and digitized NBA-licensed teams. No fouls, no free throws, no quarters required. Compete with friends and family through all new Wi-Fi leaderboards, making you more connected than ever. Pre-order now from arcade1up.com. That's arcade1up.com for an estimated early September ship date. Arcade 1UP is the place for fun. They've got even more classics too, like Golden Tee, Mortal Kombat, many others, starting at just $3.99. Check this out. They're giving away a NBA Jam Shaq edition to a Locked On listener. Enter for a chance to win a game console for your man cave at arcade1up.com/lockedon. That's arcade1up.com/lockedon. You've got until July 8th to enter to win the NBA Jam Shaq edition console. Don't miss out. Enter today. Who are you going to play with? All right, we are back here with Locked On NBA, Wes Goldberg with Brennan Kleen. Brennan, who's your biggest winner from the draft?
This is always an interesting question right after, right? It's difficult to peg, but I really like what the Pistons were able to do. I think we'll get into the Knicks part of the trade. We'll get into how complicated all of that was, and it was far too late at night to be keeping up with that many picks and protections. But at the bottom line is that the Pistons got a lot better, I think, in terms of building a young core that really makes sense together, frankly. I've been watching that team's moves, and we know they traded Jeremy Grant. I've covered the Suns, so they were a DeAndre Ayton suitor. I don't really know what this means for them, but getting Jaden Ivey at five, who is – I mean, if you were designing a partner in the backcourt for Cade Cunningham, I don't know if you would do it any differently than what Jaden Ivey is. And then Jalen Duren, I mean, he is just going to be an athletic two-way center for them, just a traditional center that you need on a team to just patrol the middle, play pick and roll with both of those guys. And his strength has always really impressed me. I think he can play in a variety of ways in the modern NBA, post, rolling, defending the rim. All that stuff. So it's just two guys. They didn't do anything super splashy, I guess you wouldn't say. They didn't reach for somebody or hit a home run, but I just think both those guys really fit well, and they're going to get a lot better around Cade this year.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned how hard it is to do this right after the draft, because obviously we don't know how these players are going to pan out. But I guess if you ask the Pistons front office, they feel like they're probably the biggest winners, because according to the reports around this, these are the two guys that they really wanted. They want, like, Jaden Ivey falling from four to five. I don't know that a lot of people had that, right, with the Kings taking King and Murray there at number four. And then to be able to get back into the lottery only by basically trading the pick that you got by trading Jeremy Grant, who you didn't really seem like you wanted all that much in the first place, to get back in the lottery and get the other guy who you really wanted. And again, the reporting around this is that they were thinking about taking Duren at number five if Jaden Ivey wasn't on the board anymore. So you get your two guys. You get your two guys here, and you didn't really have to give up anything that you didn't have before tonight. You just gave up that protected first-round pick in 2025. And instead, you know, I don't think that pick had that much value to this team. I know they're rebuilding, but you get guys firmly in the window of Cade Cunningham. You get faster, you get stronger, you get more athletic. And that's the thing with Cade is, you know, he's strong, he's fast, he's athletic, but whatever, that wasn't his calling card coming to the draft. In fact, that was probably the thing that was going against him, was that he wasn't this superstar type of athlete but he's got all these other things going for him. But now you kind of bracket him with strength, with speed, with athleticism. I really like that trio that they've got, right? With Cade and Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren there. So I'm with you. I had the Pistons as my big winner.
I saw a Detroit writer basically put it that one layer after the next, they turned Jeremy Grant into Jalen Duren, right? You know, yes. and that's a lottery pick. I mean, setting aside who they picked, that will pan out however it does. But to turn Jeremy Grant effectively into the number 13 overall pick is pretty excellent GMing. I mean, I know the Pistons got critiqued a little bit in some of their past drafts during this rebuild of trading up for a guy like Isaiah Stewart, who wasn't quite a high ceiling player and things like that. But they knocked it out of the park today. And Ivy, to me, there's been this talk like with Ayton and the Pistons of like, would Ayton really want to go to Detroit if he is indeed looking for a bigger opportunity? And not to make it too much about him, but as it pertains to Cade, there was this thought of like, well, if Ayton wants the ball in his hands, he doesn't want to play next to Cade. And that couldn't be more wrong to me. And it's going to be the same thing with Ivy. Like Cade, what makes him special is that even on an Oklahoma State team that year where there was not a lot of talent around him, he still was deferring. He still was trying to make his teammates better and did. So him being able to play next to an electric attacking guard like Ivy and then a big man there, I don't know what else they're going to do. I don't know if they need to do anything else. I really think they can take a step forward with just this.
Yeah, they're in the driver's seat, right? If something great is available, yeah, you can make that move. You can make that decision, but you don't really have to. You could just sort of go with your free agency, do your thing. You got your trio that you could presumably build around. And it's not going to be like they're awesome, you know, next year. They're probably going to be picking in the lottery again, and you just keep adding to this group. Let's talk about the other side of this trade, because my loser is the New York Knicks. I think it's everybody's loser or most confusing team or whatever. They have the number 11 pick in this draft. They back out of it completely in a trade. I'm still not exactly sure what happened. They sent out Kemba Walker. They got some picks. They were supposed to take Jalen Duren. They do take Jalen Duren, but then they trade him. And like all these different transactions, but basically the Knicks end up with no lottery picks. Some future picks, but not as many as they traded for because they had to move some of them to get off of the Kemba Walker contract. So they basically moved out of number 11, never got back into the first round, and just picked up two protected first rounders in the future that are probably not going to be as good as the 11th pick in the draft. I don't get it, man. Like, just to clear cap space, everybody's reporting like that they just wanted to clear cap space. They didn't want to add the salary that comes with the number 11 pick because they're going after Jalen Brunson. And I get it. If you really want to go after a max type of player, go after your max player. I like Jalen Brunson, but I don't think Jalen Brunson's that player. All of this for Jalen Brunson, I just find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I'll get into my thoughts on Brunson in a second. Let me say this. I think a lot of this comes down to how you value the 11th pick in this particular draft, right? Because you mentioned, and Zach Lowe kind of, I would tell people go check his Twitter feed out because he succinctly kind of put this together in a way that made a little bit more sense for me, at least. They basically get three firsts in total. They had four sort of technically, but then they had to give one in order to get off of Kemba Walker's money, which is the cap clearing stuff that you were referencing there. So, you know, in one case, like we kind of criticize like the Celtics for what they, you know, when they didn't, or the Heat for not accepting the Celtics offer to go get Justice Winslow in that one draft, right? Or different moments like that where it's like, you said no to that many picks for that player. And so, you know, maybe we look back on this and like Ousmane Dieng doesn't turn out and it's like, yeah, the Knicks got three firsts and maybe they weren't excellent firsts, but you know, it ended up sort of being a little bit of a win for them. I don't think that version of this is so far-fetched. I don't know who they would have picked. I don't know enough about that part of the draft to feel like they missed some obvious can't-miss guy. I don't really think that was there for them. So to me, I don't think it was as big of a lie. I think if this maybe wasn't the Knicks who did this, we don't laugh as hard. But to get to your point, Jalen Brunson to me, I mean, like we talked all playoffs and even heading into the playoffs about Dallas, how their number two didn't quite stack up to the number twos of the teams that they went up against. Even some of the teams that they beat in the playoffs, right? Like they beat Utah. I think the top two in Utah is better than their top two. I think you'd say the same thing about the Suns and then obviously ultimately the Warriors. So I don't see why that player is somebody that you are moving heaven and earth to go get. I completely agree with you on that. I don't understand all of this for a guy who's undersized, who doesn't project to be a focal point of a great offense, who can get played off the floor, I think, still in some playoff matchups. We didn't really see that, but I do think that's still a worry. I don't get that. That's a free agency conversation for a different day, but they did a lot in this draft to gear up toward getting a player who I just don't think is that big of a needle mover to kind of explain away what they had to do.
I think you're right. Like, they must have not loved – if they love somebody at 11, maybe they go ahead and draft that player. You like the idea of picking up future first. It's asset management. It's building up the war chest in case there is a move to be made down the line. I get that, but I just, the Jalen Brunson part is where you lose me. And you're right. Like, if it wasn't the Knicks, maybe we're not laughing them as much, but it is the Knicks. And so we are laughing at them because I can't trust them. I can't trust what they're doing here.
Well, we also probably couldn't have trusted them to develop the player that they did draft that well. But I want to throw in one last winner here just so that we do end on a positive note. I think the Spurs, what they've done the past few years, but especially this year, is just it's really, really good. I mean, for a team that was thought to they just kind of do their own thing. Who knows? Mysterious Spurs. Like, they have just gone out and got great value wings relentlessly during this rebuild, and they came away with three today. Sochan, Branham, and Wesley, who I think, you know, draft people had Wesley as like a maybe lottery type talent. They got him at 25. So I just
love
it.
And then got Kennedy Chandler later in the second round too, so they get a nice little point guard there. I'm with you. I love Sochan there for them. I think it's a great fit. Like, big winner in the draft is maybe Sochan. Like, what a great spot for him to land, right? If you're talking about all these top 10 teams. Yeah, give me Greg Popovich in San Antonio and that whole deal. Great fit for him. I love the Blake Wesley pick. Big physical wing, gets downhill. In my mind, I always felt like him and the Spurs would be a good kind of pairing for some reason, and it worked out as well as Sochan. So I'm with you. I had the Spurs as one of my winners as well, so good for them. Everybody thought they were going to, like, they're like, no, they're not going to take four players in this draft, and then they did. Always swerving when people are not expecting it. All right, we'll talk about the latest on Kyrie Irving and his list of possible trade destinations next. But first, today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports information. Find all of the latest sports development, league reviews, and news, including this year's NHL playoffs and Major League Baseball. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sport wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all of your sports scores, podcast news this season. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. According to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, in the case that Kyrie Irving and the Nets cannot come to a contract agreement, Kyrie has given the team a list of potential sign-and-trade partners, including the Clippers, the Lakers, the Knicks, the Heat, Mavericks, and 76ers. Brendan, do you think this is just still a leverage play by Kyrie, or do you think that he's really angling to possibly leave here?
I think he's really angling to leave. I don't know what he's looking for. That's the big thing, right? It's those teams, like, I don't know. It's like, it just throw out six of the best teams in the NBA. I mean, like, didn't James Harden have the Bucks on his list at one time? Like, that's not, these things don't actually necessarily hold up. I think it's a combination of what do agents think is realistic and what do we just do to get some leverage here, right? So I think the Lakers thing makes a lot of sense to me, right? We've even been hearing that since, I mean, I don't know, before Kyrie even ended up in Brooklyn with KD. I feel like there was some, like, they made up and might eventually be interested in playing together again types of stories going around. I just don't know what nobody knows what he wants, right? And that's not even an insult to him. I don't think he's at a point in his career where championships and creating something special and all those sort of, like, things we tend to hear from superstars. I don't think that's really what it is for him. I don't know what it is, but it's not that. And it's clearly not just money because he's kind of playing with fire a little bit and he hasn't been able to get another long-term contract. So I think this is real. I do think Kyrie Irving could change teams, but where he goes or what his aims are within that, I have no idea.
The thing I can't square about the Lakers being on this list is that they don't have the cap space and they don't have the assets in a sign and trade. You know what I mean? Like the Nets aren't going to be like, yeah, just give us Taylor Horton Tucker and that 27 pick. We're good to go. Like it's just not going to happen. And you're hearing the reporting that if anybody would take the mid-level exception at $6 million, it would be Kyrie. But I know we don't really know what Kyrie wants, but don't we kind of know that he wants to get paid? Isn't that the whole point of the leverage creation here? Is to get the Nets to pay him more over a longer span, and you're just gonna leave Kevin Durant to join LeBron with the Lakers for the mid-level exception? That's the part I can't square. It would be leaving $30 million plus on the table out of bitterness. That's what that would be, and there's no way around it. It's not like playing with LeBron at this stage in his career gives you a better chance than playing with Kevin Durant to win a championship. Yeah. So it would literally just be out of bitterness that he would go to the Lakers. And yo, if that's your reason, go for it. I just let's not pretend like it's not about money at all, because the whole point of this is to get more money from Brooklyn than you were getting before. I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, we have seen a lot of players in the NBA who are interesting dudes who have strange stuff off the court who perk our interest in one way or another. You have the Dennis Rodmans, you have the whoever you want to pick, Kareem, sure, in a completely different direction. But you have not seen that result in somebody just saying goodbye to millions and millions of dollars. Like that has just never happened. That would be unprecedented if it were to happen. And I think it's right to be skeptical of that. But I mean, Kyrie seems to want to prove a point. I think that you're saying bitterness. I agree. He seems to want to prove something, right? We've heard like he makes all these sort of gestures to the way that the Nets should be run in terms of, you know, me and KD are going to kind of co-manage the organization, I think is what he said at the end of at the end of season media availability that they had. He talked when Steve Nash was hired that no one's really the coach of the team. I think it seems like the Nets are sort of fed up with that type of stuff, as well as his lack of availability. I get why those things run against each other. I just don't think Kyrie's going to find that anywhere. And it's part of what makes me feel like he would do something drastic, like give up money or retire or some of these crazy things that get thrown around. I do think it's important to keep in mind, I don't think this part of it's getting enough attention just when it does come to his money. He lost his Nike deal. Yes. He doesn't have a signature shoe anymore. And his signature shoe was really popular. I don't even know if that's a smart thing for Nike to do, but the bottom line is he doesn't have that. That's a big source of money that he also just kind of lost out on. I don't know if he's still under contract with them in some smaller capacity. He obviously probably still makes money from the shoes he does sell, whatever, but that's pretty crazy to lose. And it has to play a factor. I mean, like,
in addition to the $17 million he lost last year by not playing, exactly, right?
Yeah, he can say whatever he wants, but like this is how he makes his living. So it can't just be that he gets up and leaves it behind forever.
It's crazy. The other part of this, too, is that more reports saying that if Kyrie angles to leave and ultimately does leave in some sort of sign and trade or whatever, that could open the door for Kevin Durant to also leave. Now, here's my thing, right? If I'm the Brooklyn Nets, I think it's both or it's none, right? Because Kevin Durant and whatever player you get back in return for Kyrie Irving and all this other stuff, like, I don't know. That's not winning you a championship in the East, right? You're not getting out of the East with Milwaukee and Giannis and Boston and Philadelphia, Miami, like these other teams. Like, you're not getting out of the East with just Kevin Durant surrounded by like five Kessler Edwards. Like, that's just not working. So I would trade both of them. Right. At that point, it's not even up to Kevin Durant. I would just trade everything, get as many assets as possible, hard reset on the entire thing. That could be pretty wild.
Kevin Durant is another guy where I don't think the absolute best I need to win a championship situation is necessarily the most important thing to him anymore either. But he has to be fulfilled. you know, he's a top 10, top 15, top 20 all-time right. NBA player. He's not going to toil on a mediocre or worse team just because it happens to be where his company is headquartered, right? Like, he's not going to want to suit up with Ben Simmons and whatever they get for Kyrie. I completely agree with you. I didn't think the news of Kevin not interacting with the Nets front office for like a month got enough attention at the time. That's serious. Like, I know we kind of lose track of the petty sometimes in the NBA because there's so much of it going around, but that raised my alarm bells. I've been on the case from a Suns perspective on it for obvious reasons. I think the Suns would be stupid to not pursue him, just like every team would be. But I don't think there's a point in keeping Kevin around. It would be the most insane little mini experiment of a franchise we've maybe ever seen if it ended that quickly. But I think it's on the table because
we might already be there.
Right? Yeah, like, what's the point if you're Kevin Durant to right. stay there? Like, you can run your company from anywhere. You can do your podcast from anywhere. And you just got to be in a legitimate basketball situation. And it looks like this one might not be that pretty quick. We're also talking about Ben Simmons. Like, he's out there playing every night. That's not the case either. Like,
we have no idea what's going to happen with Ben Simmons. We have no idea what's going to happen with the rest of that roster. At the end of the day, I keep trying to figure out, like, all right, what's the team that's going to trade for Kyrie Irving? I could see the Lakers doing it, right? I could see, like, Kyrie opting out and be like, you know what? Bleep you. I'm signing the mid-level with them. I know it makes no sense to anybody. It barely makes any sense to me, but I'm doing it anyway, whatever. Maybe that happens. And then they have to trade Kevin Durant and all that kind of stuff happens. But I still just – I can't – it just seems like the best option for everybody is just, all right, Brooklyn – just give him everything. Give him the 4-year max, whatever it is. Keep Kevin Durant. Hope Ben Simmons comes back. Build around those three. Yeah. And then keep trying to chase a championship because you kind of already made your bed. Mm-hmm. And it only makes sense to go further in that direction and just sort of double down with these guys. You already made the choice. It's kind of on them. Like, you already made the choice and now you're trying to hedge with Kyrie Irving. And I understand why. Right? Because he doesn't really play. He doesn't show up to work half the time. So I understand why you're trying to do it. But if it's between losing, you don't get to just lose Kyrie Irving and then still compete for championships. It's just not going to work. So yeah. You just keep it all together. That's your best chance. Or hit the hard reset. And then who knows how long that rebuild could be. All the draft pick stuff, it sounds great, but we don't. The chances of you ever getting somebody like Kevin Durant is 1 out of 1,000,000. So it just feels like you got to do it.
I think you know, being realistic from the Nets standpoint, maybe you work with him, have him opt out, but one of those where it's an opt out and then it's a 2-year deal to replace the current contract for a total that exceeds what he would have made this year, right?
Right.
2 years. I think he's at like $33 million this season. Make it 2 years,
40 million,
2 years,
yeah, whatever,
whatever it is, and go from there. Because I think you can commit to 2 years. Because that means after this season, he's already going to be an expiring contract all over again, and then you can revisit trades if he still wants to do that. Kevin will be closer to the end.
And
it's
only like 40 games for Kyrie, so it's not even that
true. It's not much wear and tear. Yeah, he'll be right back at it. Yeah, he can play till he's 40, 45 at this point. Right. It's light stuff at this point for him. Yeah. I mean, we know like he's not practicing. I mean, those guys, I don't think Kevin probably practices either. So they're just hanging out in Brooklyn. Like they could do it for a while.
Yeah. Sounds like a championship organization to me. that's a wrap for us today. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA, wherever you listen to podcasts for 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day. In the meantime, you can find me over at Locked On Heat and Brendan over on Locked On Suns. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day.